Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Well, good Monday morning, everybody. I am Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Coach Jen, also from Ocala, Florida, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for June 4th, 2012, episode number 417. This episode is brought to you by Omega Alpha Equine. And good morning, horse world!
Yep, it's Monday.
All right, let's take it from the top again.
Well, you know, you do wake up, you're supposed to wake up grateful every day, and we are over here in Florida, but I'll tell you what, I'm waking up a little tired. This is one of those Mondays where you just want to use Monday to recover from the weekend. You just, some Mondays are for that. I mean, that's just what you do. And thank you, everybody, for joining us here at Horses in the Morning, the only live morning show for the horse world. And it's just Jennifer and I today. We have no fill-in co-host today, just Jennifer and I holding down the fort. So good morning, Jennifer.
Good morning, Glenn. How are you?
I'm fine. And it's kind of weird saying that, seeing we woke up together this morning. But for the benefit of the audience, we'll say good morning to each other. Yeah, we're a little tired. We had a Florida weekend we'll tell you about. Did all kinds of Florida things over the weekend and just wore ourselves out. So we're a little tired today. But we'll talk about that in a minute. Plus, we have a lot planned for today's show. Tell us what's coming up, Jennifer.
On today's Omega Alpha Monday edition, we've got Omega Alpha. Our favorite scientist, Dr. Gordon Chang, is going to be stopping by, as he does each and every month, to tell us about some horse nutrition factoids and science. He's the most entertaining guy, most entertaining scientist since Bill Nye. He's going to be here today. And also, Wiley Leslie Wisely will be stopping by with her trifecta of interesting, snarky, and or informative topics from horsenation.com.
Well, thank you, Jennifer. My Daily Whinny. Well, my Daily Whinny goes out. I was going to say to our old friend, but then I don't want to say that because she'll get mad. Our Daily Whinny goes out to our friend, Chantel Cray Melanson, who has been a friend for years. We absolutely adore Chantel. It's her birthday today. So this is for you, Chantel. Happy birthday, Chantel. Hope you have a great, fun day out there. For everybody else who's having birthdays today, happy birthday to you, too. Well, Jennifer, do you have a Daily Whinny?
I do. And my Daily Whinny goes out to the guys of the horse world. And I don't mean the horse husbands, although they are pretty special. The guys I'm referring to are the ones that the mainstream press frequently refers to as grooms. And they're the ones who clean the stalls, scrub the walls, repair and re-engineer, and otherwise keep our horses safe and happy all year long, generally speaking, with absolutely no recognition at all, whatever. And that Daily Whinny was prompted by a news story that Glenn came across about a polo club in Santa Barbara, California, that the barns caught on fire, and the guys that they refer to as the grooms were there because that's pretty much all they do. They pretty much live there, saved all the horses from the barn fire.
Yeah, there were like 15 of them saved in that fire, and it started in the evening. So, you know, it was about 9:30 in the evening, and the Fire department apparently got there right away, but it had already gone. It started, I guess, in the tack room and had already gone into the barn. But good job for them saving everybody. All the horses were safe. And as we know, there's been some fires recently where that's not the case. Well,
yeah,
thank
anyway.
You, Jennifer. Well, we had a great
You're
weekend
welcome.
This weekend. We did a lot of Florida things. You got to ride on Sunday morning, take a nice long trail ride around the neighborhood. What have you learned trail riding here in Florida that makes it different? Is there a difference trail riding in Florida from other places we've lived?
Let's see here. So far, I'm getting the knack of the bug population. That's always key when you trail ride, because each region of the country has its own unique biting insect category, you know, because like up in Massachusetts, along coastal Massachusetts, there's certain types of biting insects and you have to deal with them in a certain way. You know, there's the fly spray, there's the time of the day, there's the fly swatters. And that's been an interesting adventure, getting used to the bug population here, because it's very different. They don't work the same way as they do in other places that we've lived. And the other one is sand. I have to vacuum out my riding boots. Stick a vacuum down in there, get the shop vac out, stick it down into the toes, and vacuum the sand out of them. That's really been interesting.
That sure beats mud, though. I'm sorry, it still beats mud. You know, sand everywhere, but boy, it's better than mud any day of the week. We had probably, 10 inches of rain the one night last week, and it just, the next morning, it didn't look like it had rained at all. There wasn't a puddle, it was just gone. It's one of the amazing things about Florida. Yeah, it is weird.
Yeah.
It is weird that you get that much rain. It just poured. And you wake up and there's no puddles or nothing. It's just all gone. That is kind of cool.
The roads steam.
Yes.
Because the macadam is so hot and it rains and you're driving along and there's like steam coming off the roads.
So we're still getting acclimated to, but we've had the most beautiful weather here since we moved here about 2 months ago now to Florida. We've just had the most beautiful weather. It's been absolutely beautiful, and I know that's going to change. And it was a little toasty yesterday down. Actually, it was kind of nice yesterday. It was in the 90s, but it wasn't bad at all down at Disney. We'll talk a little bit more about that. But on Saturday night, we got to go to our local rodeo here in Ocala. And this is basically bull riding and some barrel racing. Although the barrel racers kind of got short shrift because the timer broke and they never did get to finish. The poor girls, I felt bad for them because they came all that way with their horses and everything, and then the timer breaks and they were like, okay, well, we just can't do this. So basically the barrel racers got. And then the bull riders, we hadn't seen bull riding in a long time in person, and the bulls won, didn't they?
Pretty much, yes. The bulls tossed the cowboys. Some of those cowboys came off the bulls before the bull was the whole way out of the gate.
Yeah. We hadn't seen this was a championship of some sort. I don't understand. I don't even claim to understand all the bull riding leagues and different things.
Yeah,
there
I think
are.
It was a local circuit, as local as a rodeo can get. But I think it's just a local circuit because most of the cowboys, the ones that I caught where they were from, are from the Florida, Georgia area. So I think it was a local circuit. And my comment is that in the rodeo business, especially when you get up to the higher levels, sponsorship is huge. There's a lot of money in the rodeo industry. There's Ford truck sponsors and Wrangler sponsors and, you know, lots of big banners and lots of money. And there were local sponsors for our local rodeo. Yay, team. Good for them for stepping up and sponsoring. And you can tell them about the lawnmower sponsor. But I think that we should all push really hard for Tide to be a sponsor of our local rodeo circuit. Because I'm telling you, those were some of the grubbiest cowboys I have ever seen.
Yeah, usually they come in all clean at the beginning of the night and they want to look all good. This group, not particularly. Looked like they had been working in the barn all day. They'd ridden 100 horses, and then they were coming in to do the – it was kind of funny. But, yeah, you're right. Yeah, you're absolutely right about that. But it was fun. We had a good night. It was beautiful weather again, and it was fun. I think there were 6 rides out of maybe 36 that did the full 8 seconds. Maybe 6 rides out of that whole time. A couple cowboys got stepped on. Thank God for the vests, because a couple of them got stepped on right on their vests. And they were, you know, they're required to wear those now. And I was surprised how many were wearing helmets. There were quite a few of them wearing helmets, too, which I was glad to see.
Yeah. But it's interesting, though, because they get chucked off the bull. They run and retrieve their cowboy hat first. But when they get chucked off the bull and they're wearing a helmet, I think they take the helmet off before they even stand up.
It's pretty fast to get those helmets off.
Get those helmets right off their head.
We would tell you who won, except I have no idea. So we're not going to be able to tell you that. But some guy from Florida won.
Yeah.
So that was fun. We had a good time doing that. And there was a pretty good crowd there to watch local rodeo. And then Sunday, we headed down with my brother and sister-in-law and from Easy Signs Online, and we headed down to meet Wendy of the Driving Radio Show, Dr. Wendy Ying, and at Animal Kingdom. And we got to spend our first day since we moved here at the Disney Park. So that was fun. It was one of the reasons we moved here, is so we could go to Disney, because we're big Disney fans. And I'm going to give a shout-out to Rhonda up there in Canada, who's also a huge Disney fan, listens to our shows as well as all the Disney podcasts, and we're always talking about Disney back and forth. So, Rhonda, we had a great time at Animal Kingdom, the five of us. It was probably in the mid-90s, but Animal Kingdom is one of the parks over at Disney that has the most shade. So they have trees everywhere of all different kinds and varieties and beautiful flowering trees. And it just gives you the most shade. And there was a little bit of a breeze blowing, so it wasn't too bad yesterday, and the humidity was down.
And they have strategically placed fans everywhere.
Yes, with little spritzers in them.
It was kind of funny. We were heading into one of the exhibits, and the gathering area outside the queue had fans up there, maybe 10 feet off the ground. And it was late in the day, so it was pretty hot. And it was kind of fun because as the crowd moved along and a bunch of people would get to one of the fans, you could hear this group, each time people got to the fan. Like, oh, that feels really good.
That is true.
As a matter of fact, your brother and his wife were so impressed with those nifty fans that they have at Animal Kingdom. They came home and researched and researched and researched and got their horse one. So she has her very own Disney-esque fan in her paddock.
Yeah, these are outdoor fans. They're really heavy duty. Now, they said that fan cost them a couple $100, but they can leave it out all the time. They don't have to worry about bringing it in.
Attached to the fence. And the horse walks down to the paddock, and at the appointed time, she's standing there waiting for Pam to turn the fan on. She's like, okay, turn my fan on.
Now, it was kind of fun, too, going to Disney with Wendy along, who's a veterinarian and a traditional Chinese medicine doctor. And so it was kind of fun going along with her to Disney. It was the first time she had been to Animal Kingdom or any of the Disney parks, actually. Deprived child. And she said she had been there, I guess, when she was a little kid. But, so it was interesting to hear her. She had worked on a couple, in vet school, she had to work on a couple of different kinds of animals, so she knew a little bit about them. And there were a couple of our favorites. I got to say, the one, Jennifer, what the heck was it called, that had the zebra butt, but the face, had a giraffe body. What was that one called?
That, I'm probably pronouncing it wrong. Okapi?
Like an Akapai or Okapai. That was the coolest thing. Now, it would look like, I don't know what it looked like. It looked like it was put together by a committee of drunken sailors who all got together. They put animals in a boat, and that's what came out at the other end of a long journey. They have this sort of zebra bottom with the stripes and everything. But the body is, I guess it's more like a giraffe without the long neck and the face, too. Kind of weird.
And they are cool looking, and I love their faces. Their faces are so expressive. I mean, cool lips. But I got to thinking, they would be great exotic dressage competitors because they're very uphill.
Yeah, they are kind of uphill. You're right. And apparently their tongues are long enough. They're like just like a giraffe. Their tongues are long enough because they eat leaves off of the trees. So their tongues are long enough that they can actually get this. They can actually clean their own ears with their tongues.
Isn't that awesome?
Well, that save some Q-tips. And then they also can wash their eyelids and clean their eyeballs with their tongues. See the little things I remember.
Now, does it say anything about being able to scrub their noses with their tongue?
I'm not going there. I didn't even look. I
just cows can
la,
do
la,
that.
La, la,
cows
la, la,
can
la.
Scrub
yeah,
their
cows.
Own noses.
Hey, we also got the we went over to the one of the roller the only roller coaster really that's there is Everest, and we go over towards Everest. First thing we get there in the morning, and we thinking, well, the others weren't there yet. Jennifer and I were there early, so we get there and we go, we're going to go on Everest, and we're going to take the roller coaster ride before anybody gets there. And we get there, and it had just opened, and we look up, and there's on that particular roller coaster that goes up into the Everest mountain, which you can see from all over the park. There's a steep uphill that goes up into the mountain. Well, almost at the top of this uphill is the cars of the roller coaster cars stuck. They had stopped at the very top of the uphill. So these people in these roller coaster cars were looking straight up into the mountain, and we go over, and sure enough, the girl's that's broken. And we're going, how are they going to get them down? You know how some roller coasters, Jennifer, have the walkways along the uphills and stuff
yeah,
where they can they can work? This one didn't have that. So we're not quite sure how they got the poor suckers who were stuck up there looking straight up.
Yeah, how did they get them down? Now that you say that, we went back later, and of course, you know, the people had been rescued from the broken roller coaster. But, oh, yeah.
I guess that's maybe better than being stuck on, like, halfway down the downhill. You know, where it screeches on the brakes and almost throws you out the front of the car and you're stuck looking straight down. I don't know, but they were stuck there for quite a while. And they were all looking around. We saw them up there and we were waving to them, but they were all looking around. I thought, what would happen? You know, we actually were at Hershey one time, Hershey Park in Hershey, Pennsylvania, and that old wooden roller coaster they had, the Comet. Wasn't it the Comet? What did they call it?
Yes, I believe it was the Comet, yeah.
And there were people stuck at the very tip top of that that had to walk on this. It was an old rickety wooden roller coaster built in the 20s. And they actually had to walk the whole way down that little walkway. And it was steep in some parts because they were stuck up there. We never went on that roller coaster after we saw those people having to walk down, did we? I don't think we ever did.
I'm not a big wooden roller coaster person.
No, they hurt. They throw you around so much, they actually hurt. This one was fun. We got to ride it later in the day, and it didn't break down, and everything was fine, so we got to ride it later in the day. But I think one of our favorite parts about Animal Kingdom, two things. You really like the aviary, don't you? There's a couple of
them. I love the aviary, yes. Especially, yeah. Every nook and cranny's got a little critter in it. It's awesome.
And then I also liked the I love, and all the serious Disney people, I have to find out Rhonda's opinion, but all the serious Disney people do not like It's a Bug's Life in the big tree, in the Tree of Life in the center of the park there, the one with all the animals over it. They have a little 3D movie called It's a Bug's Life, and I absolutely love that. I think it's one of the best 3D movies in all the parks at Disney. I just love that. I just thought it was great. Wendy, too, she loved it.
You just enjoy watching the rest of the audience get grossed out by all the bug stuff.
It's kind of funny, the special effects they do, too. Wendy just about jumped out of her skin at one point. I had to hold her down. But it was fun. It was a good time.
Everybody will have to tune in to the Driving Radio Show this week and hear about it. I'm sure she'll be talking about it.
Well, that was our weekend. We had a great time. Highly recommend Animal Kingdom if you haven't been there. We got to see all the animals, but pretty much all the animals we wanted to see were out and about yesterday, which is unusual for the monkeys were having a great time yesterday, and the crowds weren't too bad. Now, from now until September, the crowds are going to be terrible and the heat will be awful. But if you get a chance, have fun. It was a good time. Well, we have a couple news stories before we get to Dr. Chang this morning. One of them was, I got to catch a little bit, if you haven't seen it yet, on YouTube or just Google it, the Jubilee Flotilla for the Queen. Of course, it's the Queen's Jubilee year, and they're doing all kinds of cool things over in England for that. And one of the things that they did, I believe it was yesterday or Saturday, was on the River Thames in London. They had a Queen Elizabeth's Diamond Jubilee pageant on the River Thames, and they had over 1,000 boats and vessels that came down the River Thames, all decked out, all in flags and banners and things. And they had the Queen's Royal Barge, which I had never seen before, which is quite an elaborate looking spectacle in itself. And then a couple, apparently they had, They had a couple row barges that are from ancient days when they used to have to row the queen down the Thames when she used to want to go for a boat ride, and with the big long oars and everything. They had a couple of those that they dug out. It must have been a mothball somewhere in one of the castles. But the barge was huge, and they led the way. There was 1.25 million people on the riverbanks cheering on the queen. It was the largest public event in the 4 days of celebrations, and it poured. These people all got soaked, yet they still went out, and the queen still did her thing. Of course, I think she was probably pretty dry in there. But they had a great time. It was neat. If you go on to YouTube and just look up the Jubilee pageant and the Thames, River Thames, and you'll see a bunch of videos on there. It was really, really cool to see all the thousand different unique little boats. Each one of those boats, Jennifer, had to be gone over by security, and then they were given a flag for the festival that they had to put on top. That way the police that were scouring all the boats from the shores and stuff could tell whether it was an approved boat, and they could pull ones out that weren't, that hadn't been security checked. So that's how they did that. But there was 1,000 of them that they approved. It was cool. That was really neat.
I'm going to have to look. Yeah, I want to see that, especially the old ones, the rowboats. I think that's going to be cool to look at.
And they're as ornate as the carriages that you see the queen go in. I mean, they were just that ornate with the gold, you know, gold all over them. It was really fun to look at. So check that out. Also, good news, the Illinois legislature, I talked about this a couple weeks ago, had a bill on its desk to allow miniature horses to be used as service animals. Well, the Illinois legislature has approved that, and it's now okay. They're sending that off to the governor. The governor is expected to sign it. It was approved, I believe, unanimously. It was near unanimous, it says. Small horses, which stand no higher than 32 inches, would be allowed in schools, stores, restaurants, and other public places, anywhere an assistance dog can go. One of the representatives in Illinois said, I have no concerns that we're going to see any stampede in grocery stores or anything like that. This is an issue that pertains really to the disabled community, and it's something that puts us into compliance to federal law. Can you imagine a stampede of minis, how funny that would be to a grocery store?
They're going to stampede to the carrot section.
I just want to see that. That'd be funny. Yeah, knocking over all the vegetable stands. That'd be cool. We had to set that up sometime, do a video. That'd be fun to watch.
Head down the cereal aisle and raid the shelves.
Yes. And you have a story about the next Pan Am site, huh?
Yes. I just came across this the other day. Now, the Pan American Games happen again in 2015. And the very first site announced for any of the Pan American Games sports was the equestrian site, and it's going to be held in, I'm probably pronouncing this wrong, Caledon, Ontario, Canada. And it's very exciting. Everybody there is all excited. And just like World Equestrian Games, Olympics, all of these international competitions, and I'm sure it works for skiing and swimming just like it does with the horse world, I was on some of the local newspaper sites, and the arguments have begun already over, you know, that should they spend the money to upgrade the facilities for the games, you know, back and forth and all that kind of stuff, just like they did when we were in Lexington for the World Equestrian Games. But congratulations to Caledon, Ontario, Canada, for being picked to be the site of the Pan American Equestrian Games in 2015. It happens July 10th through the 26th in 2015. And the Para-Pan American Games will be the 7th through the 14th.
Cool. Well, I got to tell you that this is for all the guys out there. We have a lot more guys that listen to this show than any other shows that we do on the Horse Radio Network. So this one's for you. Every once in a while, I got to throw you a bone. Well, Miss Ohio USA 2012 Bolt. Is it Bolte or Bolt? I'm not sure which. Bolte?
Sounds pretty. It's a Bolte.
Yeah, Bolte. Let's go with Bolte. She was named second runner-up Sunday in the Miss USA pageant in Las Vegas. There's a pageant you don't hear much about anymore. Actually, Miss Rhode Island was crowned Miss USA 2012, and Miss Maryland was the first runner-up, so Miss Ohio was the second runner-up. And the reason I mention this is she's a horse girl. Apparently, she's been riding since she was like 4 years old, and she's been involved in horses ever since. She was part of a championship equestrian team, although it doesn't say which one. And she also worked as a model. And I will, after the show today, because it's just Jennifer and I will post a picture of her for all the guys out there, because I will find any way I can to post pretty girls on Facebook that relate to horses some way or another for my guy listeners. So this one's for you. We'll post a picture of Audrey for you. See, I can find a horse connection anywhere.
I wonder if she rode for Findlay. Now, see, we need to have Steve, our collegiate guy, on to tell us, you know, which school she went to. They missed that part.
I'm looking here, and also Shauna is in our chat room. By the way, the chat room is open. If you want to find the chat room, just go to Blog Talk Radio and click on Horses in the Morning. You'll see it there on the homepage. She says, remember we follow her horse,
Wildfire, yeah.
Yes, Wildfire. And Wildfire has won twice and second once in the last three starts. Her lifetime stats are 64 lifetime starts, 19 wins, 6 seconds and 9 thirds. Sorry, I can't see it. I got a glare on my screen here. So 19 wins, 6 seconds and 9 thirds. Well, congratulations, Shauna. That's really cool. That is really cool. Wildfire's just done very well for her. And speaking of racing and of the horses out there, Caviar, Black Caviar, is scheduled in 72 hours to leave Australia and head for England. That's if she goes. Apparently, there's the trainer down there, he's still holding out that she has to be 100%, and I'm not sending her unless she's ready. And when she gets there, if she's not 110%, I'm taking her home and blah, 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 blah. He goes on and on and on. And this guy, Moody, is the name of the trainer. It's appropriate, apparently. Peter Moody, he said he's kind of moody. And he said, you know, she's just going to be right. And before I send Black Caviar over there, just got to be right. So Black Caviar is going to be heading to England and hopefully running in the Diamond Jubilee Stakes at the Royal Ascot. And that will be in, trying to figure out when that is, actually. It's coming up. It doesn't say in my article here. Maybe somebody can post that on Facebook, but I know it's coming up.
I think Moody just has a fear of commitment.
Yeah. Well, and you know, this is going to be the first time that the horse actually has traveled like this. So
yeah,
it'll be interesting to see how the horse handles traveling too. I'm trying to find here. I can't seem to find a date on it. Well, it's coming up. It'll be one of the races coming up in England soon. So that's Black Caviar. And also one other racing story before we get off to our guest here today. Taking a look here, and that's, I'll have another, by the way, just because I haven't heard this.
I'll have another Bowie Meister photo finish. I'll have another.
Did some galloping, but in the last couple of days at the track up there in New York, it's Dullahan that actually posted some terrific times in 45.97 Sunday morning at Belmont Park. That was an exceptionally fast workout, and kind of indicates that Dullahan is in top shape. I'll have another. They've been galloping. I'll have another, but they haven't really given him the strong workout like some of the others are doing. They said they were just going to keep I'll have another in shape before the Belmont this weekend. So, you know, they're doing that. Union Rags breezed 59, a good 15 seconds slower than Dullahan, but we don't know whether they're holding Union Rags back a little bit or not. So Union Rags is going to be heading up there, I think, for Wednesday. Union Rags is still back at the Fairhill Training Center in Elkton, Maryland. So that's coming up this week, too. We're going to have some coverage here of the Belmont this week. Plus, we have Frankie Lovato joining us as co-host on Friday. So that is coming up as well on Friday. We're going to take a little break here. There's only two of us. Jennifer has to get the guests on the line here. We're going to give you a couple of songs today. Well, the first song I'm going to play for you is appropriate, I think, for a Monday, and it's called Happy House. We're going to be back talking nutrition with Dr. Chang, and then we have some fun stuff for you with Leslie Wiley of Horse Nation today. We're going to be talking about bratty kids, clueless boyfriends, and overbearing moms. It's something that we've all had to deal with one or another of those in our lifetime with horses. But first, a little Templeton Thompson, Happy Hal. That was Templeton Thompson with Happy House. And thank you to Templeton for allowing us to play her music. You can find all of her music at templetonthompson.com. And Jennifer, do you have Dr. Chang ready to go?
Dr. Chang is ready to go.
All right, why don't you take this one?
All right, I'm going to press the button. Good morning, Dr. Chang.
Hi, Jennifer. How are you?
I'm doing great. You're not used to saying Jennifer. You're used to saying good morning, Jamie.
That's right. And I heard Jamie's out in Spain. I did offer her when she told me that to be her baggage carrier, et cetera. But somehow I think she turned down my request.
Yeah, and she had about 1,000 offers, Dr. Chang. Let me tell you.
So she basically said, get in line?
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
She didn't take our request very seriously either.
She was raffling off spots in her suitcase.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I hope she has a good time. I know she'll have a great time.
Yeah, she is. Well, she's been reporting in on Facebook and showing us pictures. She's been riding Andalusians on the beach, and she has this picture of her on this big, beautiful Andalusian, and she's been having a blast. Now, the last we heard from her, she is on her second week in Portugal, and she said we won't hear from her for a while because she's going to be out of internet range. So I don't know what that means. The first week she was very open and posting pictures every day. The second week's kind of a mystery. She's going to be in Portugal and she hasn't told us much. So I think she wants some quiet time with hubby.
Yeah. Well, I hope they have a great time. I know it's a fantastic place to visit. You know. But anyway, we're getting back to what we should be talking about today. Hello.
Yes.
Which is.
Go ahead. Yep.
Yeah, well, one of the things that a lot of people have asked us is, why is the Omega Alpha herbal product so effective compared to other herbal products that's been around, right? And I always tell everybody, you know, we did not invent the concept of herbal products. Herbal products have been kicking around a long time, right? one of the biggest mistakes that everybody has made when they were doing herbal products, however, was that they said, well, horses are herbivores. All we need to do is to take the herbs, do the blend, crush it up into fine powder, and then give it to the horses to eat. Well, the biggest problem with that concept was that, first, some of the horses just didn't like the taste of it, right? Just because they were horses doesn't mean they like the taste of every piece of green stuff you give to them. And I say to everybody, if you can't get it into you, I don't care how good it is for you, it isn't going to do any good, right? But more importantly, one of the things that we have done is that we have done a liquid extract of these herbs. And the reason that's important, and I explain that by using an analogy. If, you know, in the morning when you wake up, let's say you want to get a cup of coffee, all right? The reason you're taking a cup of coffee is that you want to get some caffeine into you. Now, if I was to tell you, here, take a teaspoon of coffee grounds, chew on this, and wait for that coffee caffeine rush to hit you. Well, you'll be doing that for a long time and waiting because it's not going to happen. The reason it's not going to happen is because when you take that those coffee grounds, well, one of the first things that has to happen is that your body has to break apart all those cells in the coffee grounds and allow the caffeine to get out. Now, that doesn't happen in one step. It takes a long time, and it happens over the full day in your gut, right? And it's the same. So when that happens, you get a little bit at the beginning of the small intestine, and you get a little bit as you move along. So all along the day, you get a little hits of caffeine, but you're never getting a large enough dose. The key for this is that, A, dosing, for any effect, you got to have a large enough dose for it to happen, right? And so the analogy there is that if you have a headache and I take an aspirin tablet and carve it up into 20 pieces and give you a piece every half an hour, you will have that headache for the rest of your life. It's because, not because the aspirin is not doing its job, it's just that you're not getting enough of it at any one time. So when we take a liquid extract, like you brew your coffee, you drink the coffee, a cup of coffee, you get all that caffeine all at once, because all that has to happen is your body just has to absorb that liquid, and it's very efficient at absorption, right? So it's the same thing with the horses. If you give them a little bit in powder form, it'll take all day for them to break it down, so you never get enough at any one time into their system, right? So whereas when we do a liquid, that's why it works. Secondly, when we do a liquid, we can make it taste good. Right? And it's, you know, horses are like little children. If you have a 2-year-old, I don't care how much you explain, if they don't like it, they don't like it. they're not gonna drink it. Right? So the same thing with the horses. I mean, with an adult like yourself, Glenn, I could talk to you and say, Glenn, this is good for you. You know, you should have this, right? With a horse, I don't think that works. You have a hard time explaining to a horse.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, so now, that's why the liquid one works a lot better.
So when you take and you make an herbal supplement
extract
for the horse, and it's an extract. So explain the difference between an extract, because you can get a liquid by adding water and shaking it a lot or creating an emulsion.
When we do an extract, one of the things that has to happen with an extract is that you have to get all the stuff that's within the cells to come out, right? And then what you have to get it to come out into the liquid that you're getting. Now, what we do, and you have to do it so that you don't destroy any of your active ingredients too, right? So you got to play around. You know, there's a lot of important little things that you have to look at to get a proper extract to optimize it, right? Yes, you're right. You can shake it up, etc., in water. But if you shake it up in, have you ever brewed tea? If you took tea, right, and you use cold water and you shake it up, right, you're gonna have to sit there for a long time before you get any tea out, right? If you heat the water, you get a better extract, right? Get a better tea infusion. But sometimes if your hot water is too hot, you change the taste of the tea, right? And when you change the taste of the tea, what that means is that you've destroyed some of your active components, what you're looking for, Right. So when we do our extracts, you know, those are all of the things that we have to be careful of, that we're not destroying anything. That's important.
So how the part that you and I that we can't see, how do we know?
Well, one of the things during our extraction processes, we monitor the quality of our extracts by we have a couple of machines in here that will allow us to monitor. We have something called an HPLC, and one of the things that an HPLC does is called high pressure liquid chromatography. We can run the extracts through it, and then from there we will see, okay, what compounds are in there, what are we missing, and what is being damaged, right? And so from batch to batch, we have done this, and we have sort of optimized our processes using that methodology, right? So we know we get the best that's available that we can possibly get. Let's put it that way. Until new technology comes out, We do the best with what we have.
So are there different herbal ingredients that require different methods of creating an extract? Like, are there herbs that need to be put in hot water and other herbs that need to go in some kind of an alcohol? So there's different herbs that need different treatment?
Yeah, different herbs will do. Yeah, there are some different herbs. There are some herbs where if you use water, you're not going to get anything out, because what the actives you're looking for are soluble in alcohol and they won't come out in the water, right? There are herbs which will come out in the water, but then if the temperature is too high, it breaks down the actives to a point where it's useless. Right, you can take it out, but it's useless. Right, so those are some of the little things that you have to know when you're doing some of these herbs. Go ahead.
Well, you finish your thought there, because I'm going to jot this question down.
No. Go ahead. Well, another thing I was going to say with the liquids is that people don't realize this, but in order for anything to be absorbed through the intestinal tract, it has to be soluble in the liquid, or sort of emulsified in the liquid, etc., because the process of absorption into the gut, right, involves a liquid medium, right? So if the gut itself didn't put out things like hydrochloric acid, or did not put out things like bicarb, etc., or put out things like like the bile salts, right? A lot of the foodstuffs that we take in would not get absorbed. But the absorption happens because you have what's called a liquid media. So the food gets broken up. The enzymes can only attack it if the food is covered with liquid, right? Like enzymes, etc., they all work in a liquid environment. If you only had dry powders going in, one of the first things that has to happen, your dry powders has to get all soaked up with liquid, etc., which is provided by the acids in the gut or the other fluids that the GI tract releases. And then this works as a medium to allow the active ingredients to infuse or to diffuse through the intestinal tract membrane into the bloodstream. And that's how it's absorbed.
So are there certain herbs then, Dr. Chang, that you want to have in powder form and you want to take longer to absorb, or are they
usually for herbs, you always use the liquid extracts will always work best. There's no powdered herbs that will work as good as a liquid. Herbs don't, just because the active ingredients you want are usually inside of the herbs, inside the cells, the individual cells that make up the herb.
Okay, got it.
All right, so you got to break that. You got to break that thing apart first, right? Think of the cells like a box, a bunch of cardboard boxes, okay, that are stacked together in a three-dimensional format. So think of it as the nearest analogy I like to use is like you have a skid of a pallet full of product or a skid full of boxes, and you have the active ingredients are sometimes inside the boxes, or the active ingredients are embedded in the cardboard material itself. So in order to get the active ingredients, you have to either A, destroy the cardboard so it allows the stuff that's in the cardboard to leach out into the liquid, or it's inside the box. But in order to get into the box, you still got to destroy that cardboard to get that stuff out, right? And then you think about it, the three-dimensional structure, you have cardboard boxes in, that's covered but behind other cardboard boxes, right? So you have to be able to get to all of those boxes. And that process of extraction is how you get at it.
Okay. That makes
clear
sense.
Clear as mud?
No, that does make sense. I like your analogies because I can actually understand them. And if I can understand them, anybody can understand them, Dr. Cheng. That's for certain. So now, so are all of your products in the liquid form?
No. We have a few powders, and I'll explain why we have a few powders. For example, one of our powders is a probiotic product, right, which is Biotic 8. Now,
right.
The reason
I thought you did, and that's why I asked that.
Yeah.
You know,
because, no, the reason we have that product as a powder, because, again, that's shelf life stability. The problem with probiotics or bacteria, probiotics are what they call good bacteria. The problem with bacteria is that if you put it in the liquid, they come to life. Now, if they come to life and it's sitting in a bottle, right, you have to remember they when they're alive, they eat and they poop. Well, when they poop, right, the stuff isn't going anywhere. It's still staying in that bottle. So pretty soon what happens is that their bacteria poop basically gets to such a high concentration, it kills them off, right? And if you want live bacteria in as a probiotic, right, putting it in a liquid defeats the purpose of it, right? So that's why we keep it in a powder form. Probiotics are like yeast. You know baking yeast? For those people who still remember how to bake, when my mom used to bake, right? I shouldn't say when she used to bake. She still bakes, right?
Okay.
but you got to have yeast that's still alive. And one of the things we know that killed off a lot of the yeast was moisture, right? Because moisture brings it back to life. And then when it came back to life, there was nothing for it to eat at that point, right? So you have to keep probiotics dry. Right, and then that makes them live longer. You have a better shelf life with those.
Dr. Cheng, we are, I say this all the time, but it's true. We are the only morning show in the world this morning talking about pooping probiotics. I guarantee you.
Well, I was gonna make a crack there, but the winemakers won't love me. I always call wine bacteria poop. Because you have to remember, all that alcohol, that's a waste product of bacteria yeast.
It is funny when you go take the bourbon tour in around Lexington. I don't know if you've gone into any of the distilleries and taken the tours, but when you see those big vats of bubbling yeast, making the bourbon, you do think of that, and it smells like that sometimes too. Well, thank you, Dr. Cheng. This is OmegaAlphaEquine.com, OmegaAlphaEquine.com. That is very interesting because I didn't know all of that about the liquid versus the powder. That was a good topic for today.
Yes. It's something that people have asked us in the past, and I've always said to them, whilst we're innovative, we're not, at the end of the day, rocket scientists, and to some extent, we are rocket scientists, but it's not to say it's like that what we do, nobody else in the world can do. But, what we have done is that the only thing we've done is recognize the importance of giving it in a form that's usable, right? Our product in a form that's usable. Before I go, I just wanted to do a plug on our Coach's Corner. We have set up a series of teleseminars and webinars for people who are interested in horses' health per se, and we have a series of great topics that's upcoming. I'm looking at my list here, and we have one that's on June the 25th, and it's called Supporting Your Horse's Immune System with Antioxidants. For those interested, if you go to the Omega Alpha Equine website, there'll be a lot more information as to how to get there, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Good. Well, that's terrific, and it's at OmegaAlphaEquine.com. Very interesting, Dr. Cheng. Thanks once again for joining us this morning.
Well, thank you for having me.
All right.
Take
appreciate
care.
Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
And, And, of course, all of Dr. Chang's nutritional tips can also be seen over at Horse Tip Daily. So if you wanted to listen back to what he said today or you missed part of it, you can go either listen to this show in its rerun form, or you can go over to Horse Tip Daily, the show that Jennifer does as well. We're going to take a little break here for another song. We're going to come back with Leslie Wiley from HorseNation.com in a moment. And also I want to tell you a little bit about our Horse Radio Network show highlight for the week. And we'll be right back. We have, it's one of those songs I have coming up that Jamie doesn't like too much, but I'm going to play it anyway because she's not here. And you know what? It is coming up to time when we're going to be making the first cutting of hay, and that's what this song's all about.
From winter, the grass is green. Hard to imagine that we will need to feed the horses so slick and round, but they're gonna need it when snow's on the ground. Hay in time, hay in time, making hay while the sun shines, sweating bullets. I swear it's 99. Calling all your favors, 'cause it's hay in time. So call up your family, call all your friends, and we'll drink a cold one when the day ends. And when we and know we earned that ale. Hay in time, hay in time, making hay while the sun shines, sweating bullets, I swear it's 99. Calling all your favors, 'cause it's hay in time. If you are a farmer, you know it won't make you rich. It's hard work, that's no lie. But the satisfaction at the end of days like this, no amount of money can buy.
Horses in the Morning. I am Glenn the Geek here with Coach Jen. We're holding down the fort today as Jamie is still on her exotic vacation to Spain and Portugal, and she'll be back a week from tomorrow, back in the co-host seat over there. And this show obviously is sponsored by OmegaAlphaEquine.com. And I do have a Horse Radio Network show highlight for you. The Equestrian Legend Show, episode number 23 by Pessoa Saddles is out. Show jumper Hans Guttner Winkler is highlighted on that show. And I didn't realize that it holds the most gold medals for any show jumping rider for the Olympics. He had won 5 titles in 56, 60, 64, and 72 in team competition and an individual championship in 1956. 6. And he talks about his life and a little bit about his past and what he's up to now. He's a marketer now in the horse world, helps put on horse shows, and is still kicking. And he's not a youngster, but it was good for Chris to get him on to the Equestrian Legend Show. And that's episode number 23. You can find all of our shows in the Horse Radio Network at horseradionetwork.com. Well, a couple other things while we're waiting for Leslie to call in from Horse Nation, because we're going to be talking about some fun stuff with her today. I mean, we're talking about a trifecta of topics with her this morning: bratty kids, clueless boyfriends, and overbearing moms. Topics that are always a favorite here on Horses in the Morning. And a couple other things. New Jersey is kicking off the Month of the Horse. That's right. Secretary of Agriculture Douglas Fisher yesterday kicked off the Month of the Horse at Rutgers Equine Science Center. And apparently the state's equine industry in New Jersey, and I did not know this, is valued at $4 billion and generates $1.1 billion annually. And a recent study by Rutgers showed that there are 7,200 equine facilities and 176,000 acres dedicated to equines, and that there are 42,500 equines in New Jersey. Did you know that New Jersey was that prominent, Jennifer, with horses? I did not know that.
Well, I knew they were, you know, back in the day, they were really, really influential in the standardbred industry. But, boy, those numbers do sound impressive. It's always fun for me to look at, you know, how they got the numbers. But those are some impressive numbers. Yeah.
Yes, they are, definitely. And now Norco's back in the news. What's going on over in Norco?
When we were out in our trip to Norco last winter, Horsetown, USA, where you can ride your horse to the bar, tie him in the paddock, go get drunk, and then ride home, and it's all pretty legal. they have a lovely horse show rodeo facility that they put up, and it's a public facility. And just like every other town in America who puts up any kind of public facility, they're having difficulties getting it to pay for itself. And the folks over at Norco on the local board there have decided that they're going to have to revamp the business plan and try to figure out how to get the budget in order, because it costs $300,000 a year to run, and they only get $86,000 a year in fees from people using it. That's a little upside down. So they're going to check into some things. And I looked at that facility because we went up there, and they had a little ribbon cutting, and they had a little thing going on in there. I can't figure out how they spend $300,000 a year to run the place.
I don't know either, because it's just a couple of arenas. There's really not much around it. I don't know either.
It's two arenas and a parking lot. But
I don't know.
Really nice.
Maybe
it's,
yeah, they're really nice arenas, but I don't know, other than drag the footing every once in a while, I don't know what you'd have to do.
Yeah, they're gonna train a bunch of local volunteers, go local volunteers to do maintenance up there, and see if they can't reduce the budget a little bit on maintenance. And they're also going to try to figure out a plan that will allow outsiders, I'm not too sure exactly what outsiders are, to rent it, so they can just come in and rent the facility for the day to train their horses or do whatever like that. So it'll be interesting to see how that whole thing pans out, because it's a lovely facility, and I want to see it keep going.
Well, we do have to remember it's California. They find a way to make everything more expensive. The only state that does that better is Massachusetts. So between, you know, we have to keep that in mind, too. Speaking of expensive, there's a property that's still on the market. Is this one we had talked about before, this Marlboro Colts Neck property?
It sounds familiar, and guess what? It's in New Jersey.
Yes, that's right. See, that's why I thought it was interesting that this particular one's in New Jersey. $19 million will get you a nice little property, 46 acres, in a gated estate with horse stables and equestrian ring and a heated pool and a cabana.
A cabana.
I mean, you know what? You know, cabanas are important. You're spending $19 million. You better have a darn cabana. I want a cabana with my $19 million.
That's funny. Cabana.
Hey, a couple things from Facebook, too. Mel Donald, our friend down there in Australia, said, "Where is Jamie when you need her? I just acquired Joe Montana twin." Remember, Jamie had acquired a Joe Montana horse, which was a rescue horse, thoroughbred. And she says, so I'm now fully in the green bean off the tracker camp. And I saw pictures of your Joe Montana. And you're right. It kind of looks a lot like Joe Montana, Mel. So good luck with your off the track. And I hope that your Joe Montana does as well as Jamie's is doing. Doing pretty well. And then Ellen from New York City, our one and only, I think, listener from New York City. I'm sure there's others, but Ellen is the one we know about. And she said she was listening to Friday's podcast, Reese Coffler Stanfield. We got talking about donuts and how we love Dunkin' Donuts. And we did have some over the weekend, by the way, Ellen. And she says she also loves Dunkin' Donuts. However, the best donuts are the Krispy Kreme donuts while in Miami, Florida. I got to say that Jennifer and I do not agree. Either you're a Krispy Kreme fan or you're not. And I just find them weird. I don't know. Maybe we just grew up on Dunkin' Donuts. But I know Jennifer feels the same way. Neither one of us are Krispy Kreme fans. As I said, I think you're one or the other.
Yeah, I would like to see somebody who's a dual donut lover. I've never met somebody who can do both.
Right. That's exactly right. Well, why don't we see if we can get Leslie is here, I see. So why don't we get to Leslie from Horse Nation. This is our Monday segment we do every week with our friends over at Eventing Nation and Horse Nation. This is Leslie Wiley, who runs the show over there, known as just Wiley. You'll see all of her posts just as Wiley. Why do you just use your last name on all of the posts over there? Are you incognito?
Yeah. I think I was trying to be incognito at first, and then the truth came out. My identity was revealed.
Yeah, we kind of blew it, didn't we? We just called you by your whole name, and that kind of blew the whole thing. Sorry about that, by the way.
Leslie Marie Wiley, and my social security number is...
Now, did you change your last name now that you're a married girl?
I didn't. I'm keeping Wiley. I think maybe he should change his last name.
Oh, so does that show, is that a lack of commitment or your stand for feminist pride, or what is that?
It's my stand for feminist pride, absolutely, yeah.
Or now, because everybody knows you as Wiley, because you accidentally used your last name on your first blog post, that you'd have
exactly.
to change that. Nobody would know who you are.
I know, right? Well, see, it would be one thing if I was, you know, if I was 20 years old, but I feel like, you know, That's my name. That's what people know me by, so I got to hang on to it.
How's he feel about this, or does he care?
He's an incredibly understanding man.
Well, he's
obviously.
A work girl. He'd have to be. Yeah, exactly. He'd have to be. We're going to talk a little bit about that here when we get to a couple of the topics today. So what do you got for us?
Well, we've kind of had some fun posts this last week about social dynamics in a rider's life. We had a really funny comic. There's a cartoonist every week who Morgan Schmidt, who writes or draws a comic called The Idea of Order. And this past week, she let her unhorsey boyfriend stand in for her, and it was just hilarious. I think his comic, the subject matter was it was things he didn't understand about horses, like such as, and this is actually a good point, why would anyone want to trot ever when you could walk or canter and it's much smoother? Good point.
I got to tell you too, Leslie, before you go on, I looked at his comic, and he is your cartoonist Morgan Schmidt's boyfriend, as I understand
yes.
it.
Yes, yeah, he's the boyfriend, yep.
Okay, so, and she is great. I mean, but obviously he has a little bit less artistic ability. He's kind of the stick figure guy like most of us are, but he does a good job because I'll tell you why. In the first one there, he says why anyone would ever use the trot, and then he has the three little graphics, and you know exactly what he's talking about with his three little simple graphics. He did a good job with it.
He did. I was like, he kind of has a point. Why do we trot?
True. Every horse husband asks that the first time they get on, and your wife starts to trot, and your horse just goes along, and you're being bounced out of the saddle. That happens every time. Yep.
Right. And then another one he didn't really understand was I think he described it as the hay to poop ratio. And then
yes.
The graphic was these little bales of hay being eaten by the horse, and then it was pooping just, you know, an improportionate amount of poop.
Does happen.
Like, that kind of makes sense too. Seems like lust goes
days,
in and comes out.
I know. And isn't it true that some days when you're cleaning the stalls, this happened when I was cleaning the paddocks last week, is some days you feed them the same amount every day, yet some days it seems like you have twice the amount of poop. I don't know why that is.
Why is that?
I don't know. It seems like some days they're better, you know, they're better processors of the poop, because it just seems like some days there's twice the amount, yet you fed them the same amount. I don't get it. I don't get why that works that way.
It's a mystery. I think Morgan's boyfriend just hit the nail on the head.
And you know what, Leslie? If you think about it, it's in direct proportion to the amount of time you have to clean the stalls that day. The day that you're rushed and you have to get out because your boyfriend wants you to do something and you're going to be in trouble and it's a non-horsey thing and you're going to have to get out to do it or you'll be accused of being late again, is the day they all poop twice as much. It's true. Take note
it's
of
true.
That next time.
It's true.
Yeah. Yeah. You're never
you're
late,
very,
though,
very
when he wants to go someplace. Are you? You're never late, are you?
Oh, never. Never.
That was pretty good. He did a good job with that little graphic. You can see that by weight.
I would absolutely give him his own column if he wanted one. Absolutely.
Yeah, because his drawings are so simple yet so effective. They did a good job. You can find it at horsenation.com. Hey, the one I really want to talk to you about is Bratty, one you call Bratty Kids. I got to tell you, you got more discussion post about, and it's called Bratty Kids. Let's discuss Bratty Kids. And all you said is, I know juniors get stressed out at horse shows, but my pet peeve is when they take it out on the people who are enabling them to ride in the first place. At a recent show, I overheard multiple kids barking orders or snapping at their just trying to be helpful parents. Thoughts? And boy, you got a lot of thoughts on that one.
Yeah, apparently that struck a chord with a lot of people. A lot of people have had that same experience, observed similar scenarios, and which is kind of sad. But for sure. Yeah, it was inspired by, I was at the Kentucky Horse Park last weekend, and there was this kid in particular. There's a kid stabled across from me who just was, I'm not sure who she was. She seemed more, you know, her poor parents were just, you know, they're trying to be helpful. They're trying to, you know, give her a hand. And she just would scream at them, you know, and then scream at her horse as well, you know. Yeah. Have you seen much of that yourself?
Yeah, and you know what? We sure have. And I did notice an interesting thread when I read through the comments that were on your post there, and you had like 25 comments. It was interesting to see, too, there were kind of – and you had a lot of teens that are teens right now that were posting, too, that admitted they're probably guilty of that. And, you know, I have to say that one of the things that I've noticed just sitting back and watching at plenty of horse shows over the last 25 years is that what you said tends to be true, and I don't want to overgeneralize here, but the teens that tend to be the ones that are barking orders at their parents are also the ones that are being a little rougher than I would like to see with their horses. They're yanking on their horses' mouths or, you know, kicking them or whatever. They tend to be those same teens. Did you find that to be true, too?
Absolutely, because I think it just in general stems from a lack of respect and a lack of, you know, compassion and gratitude, you know.
Now, I want to clarify here, though, before we both get in trouble, that Leslie and Jennifer and I have no kids, so we're all speaking from the point of we've never had the kids at the horse show, so we are speaking from that point. But I want to read one here, if I could, that was posted by Laura Gordon on that posting of yours, and she said, I recently took a few young ladies to their first event. I think she's a trainer, and their parents and my husband were there as helpers. There are 3 or 4 hours when you have multiple young riders in the same division competing for the first time that are true madness. Before the event, I discussed with the parents, and I love this. This is a helpful hint. before the event, I discussed with the parents that the dialogue during the next 4 hours would be limited to, can I help you with that? Do you need me for anything, and is there anything I can do? The rider's dialogue was limited to yes, please, and thank you. Tensions can run so high in the thick of things that even nice kids can say things that can seem short or disrespectful, and helpful parents can actually make things harder. We made it through pretty well sticking to the script. I love that.
That's so smart, right?
Yeah. You give them a script like, beforehand. You're allowed to say these things, and that's all you're allowed to say. You violate from the script, and you're in timeout in the back of the horse trailer cleaning poop. It's perfect.
It really is. It really is. Just laying it out beforehand, a little preemptive strike. I thought that was really smart, too.
You do see a lot of those kids, too, at Leslie at horse shows that you wonder why they're there. You know, are they being forced to be there? Because they just don't seem like they're enjoying anything. And maybe it's their way of handling the pressure, the stress. But, you know, you're there to have a good time. You're there to have fun. And I think that gets lost sometimes when we put the pressure of horse shows on. And that's probably true not only of horse shows, but of soccer kids and basketball kids and, you know, the whole thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Which leads us to our next one. Go ahead.
Show moms.
Yes.
Which
show
I,
moms.
You know, have you seen the programs like the reality TV about like the Texas cheerleader moms and the, you know, oh, the pageant kids. Moms,
I can't,
you know,
watch that show. I can't watch
it. Yeah, that's just not quality programming, but. But you know, I think you could do something similar with horse show moms sometimes. In some cases, and we have a new columnist on board who writes a column called "Confessions of a Horse Show Mom," and just and she's clearly like kind of a novice, still, you know, kind of getting her feet wet and the whole thing, but has definitely picked up very quickly on some of the rules of the road, such as when you're at a horse show, you know, the trainer is the boss. When you're at the barn, the trainer is the boss. Even if, you know, you're the mom and the trainer happens to be, you know, could be your daughter, you know, is a 20 something, you know, that's still her house, you know? So just respecting that and really coming into it with an open mind rather than a sort of mom knows best, parent knows best kind of attitude.
And once again, I think, you know, you can correlate that. How many times, you know, especially if you've had young kids and they all play soccer now, how many times have you seen the parents trying to tell the coach how to coach?
Right.
It's the same thing here. And, you know, Jennifer, having been a trainer, we've, you know, for so many years of teenagers and kids, we've seen both sides of that coin. And the ones, you know, the ones who tended to have the kids that had the most respect were the ones that parents respected the trainer. You tended to see that the kids who were the ones that we were talking about, the bratty kids, were the ones that had the parents that were kind of, you know, just over the top as well. So, you know, that goes together. These kids don't grow up in a vacuum.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. Exactly. You know, they tend to mimic what they see, and, you know, that's the environment that they have around them. But this was a good column. I did read it, and you know, from Barbara, and it was a good column. You know, I often talk about having a horse husband 101 or horse boyfriend 101, where when you start dating a horse girl, you have to take these online courses and you have to pass the test before you're allowed to continue dating. That should be true, too, of new parents whose kids go, I want a pony, and then you actually get them one, and then they actually want a show and stuff. We should have parenting 101 for horse moms and dads, because there's so much to learn that you have to learn the hard way.
There is. And I found a book. Someone had put out a book, the author's name slips my memory right now, but she actually put out a book about about being a show mom. I think I have a link to it on the website. Just sort of, you know, like do this, don't do this. Here's what you can expect from lessons. Here's what you can expect from shows. You know, because you know, that's it's just such a world unto itself, the horse world is, you know. So maybe they could do a sequel to that book about being a horsey husband or boyfriend.
Now, the one I'm familiar with is called The Horse Show Mom Survival Guide for Every Discipline.
That was written
by Susan Daniels. Matter of fact, Jennifer, why don't we see if we can get Susan on the show? She'd be a good one to get as a guest on the show, because I think this would be a good topic to talk about. Yeah, and it's got a little bit of humor to it too, that book. It's a pretty good book.
You got to bring humor to anything in this sport, right?
Now, before we go on, what did I see here? There was an article about our very own Jamie Jennings that got posted this morning on Horse Nation. What's that?
Absolutely. Well, you know, as you know, Jamie's videos, in her experiences, was featured on Darlene Newman's blog last week. And so we linked to that and also gave her a little well-intentioned, good-natured Horse Nation ribbing ourselves, such as I think there was the line in there, something to the effect of this video, which was of Jamie galloping her beautiful Andalusian on the beach, may make you want to toss a glass of sangria in her face in a fit of jealous rage.
And when you see the picture of her on that black Andalusian, doesn't that make you want to toss a bit of sangria in her face?
Oh, my gosh. I bet she tries to stuff that horse in her suitcase and bring it home with her.
And I have never seen a horse, and that, if you want to see a picture of that, just go to horsenation.com, and you'll see it right there on the homepage, second or third article down, of that beautiful Andalusian with the braided mane. And I have never seen a horse with as long a legs as that. You know how some models and girls that you see, you go, wow, she has long legs. Well, this horse has long legs. I mean, long legs.
Yeah, that horse could be in a horse calendar for sure.
Yeah, and she looked so good. She
was
sitting there proper, and she had good posture. I was proud of her. She looked good up there.
Representing.
That's right. Well, thank you so much for posting that on there. It was fun to watch her riding on the beach and having such a good time. She did text me over the weekend, and she's absolutely having a blast. She's having a great time, and she said, I'd like to say I miss you guys, but I really don't, because I'm having such a good time. So at least she was honest.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for posting that. We appreciate it.
Oh, sure. Now, when did she get back?
A week from tomorrow, she'll be back on the show. She's getting back. I think she actually flies back on Saturday. It's the same day as the final leg of the Triple Crown up there at Belmont. She'll be flying back while the race is being run, I think.
Oh, wow.
So we should we'll be able to talk to her on Tuesday and find out all about the trip. I told her I'd give her 15 minutes to tell us about the trip, because that's all your relatives want to hear when you go away and come back, even your honeymoon. You got about 15 minutes before they start to tune out. Isn't that true? You just took one. Isn't
that
true?
It's so, you know, true,
excited.
Yeah.
They're excited for you and everything, and we want to hear a little bit. But once you go over 15 minutes, you're just gloating, and we don't hear about it anymore.
Right. So
you imagine,
true.
Jake, trying to tell us about 2 weeks in riding Andalusians in Spain in 15 minutes. It takes her 15 minutes to tell us about a 2-minute thing that happened yesterday. You know?
Right.
We better reserve the whole show. I'll just interview her.
Yeah, block
we'll just
out.
Make her the
block
guy.
Out the show.
Exactly.
I would listen to an hour and a half. I really would. Just close my eyes and imagine that I was there. It's like, how exactly that passage felt again.
Yes.
Just one more time.
Well, Jennifer, make sure you we don't book a guest on next Tuesday morning, because it's going to be bad if we do. She'll be just itching. Well, thank you so much, Leslie from horsenation.com. We appreciate you being on today.
Oh, you're so welcome. Have a great week.
All right, you too.
Great. Bye.
Well, Jennifer, I know you had another story that you wanted to cover today, and it looks like one of those stories you better translate. Is it the one with the genetic story? Because I was getting lost. That's just
that's
lost.
Because
so you better
don't read. You don't read Dick Francis novels. That's the reason
that's
you
true.
Didn't understand what was going on there.
Okay,
although
go
this
ahead.
Is
make it
this
simple,
is the real
though.
Deal. This is not a novel. Way back in the day, let me see if I can dig the date out of the date. There it is. In 1880, the Epsom Derby, which is a big famous race in the UK, kind of like the Kentucky Derby is to us, a horse by the name of Bend Orr, B-E-N-D, space O-R, won the race. And at the time, there was a big controversy that they had put a ringer in the race, and that really wasn't Bend Orr that won. Well, the steward and the trainer of Bend Orr and the trainer of the second place horse, Robert the Devil, were arch rivals. So you can imagine, you know, the fuss that happened. Well, the stewards found in favor of the trainer and owner of Bend Orr. So Bend Orr, for the past eons, has been the winner of the Epsom Derby in 1880. Well, some scientists who have been doing genetic research for the purposes of medical research to figure out about how genetic diseases are passed on from horse to horse also just happened to figure out that indeed the horse that won the Epsom Derby in 1880 was not Bend Orr.
Well, how do they know that? The horse, did they dig it up?
Well, apparently they have the skeletons of a lot of these horses, and Bend Orr is one of them.
What do they have a boneyard for old horses who won races?
Well, you got to remember, a lot of these really famous horses were buried at the end of, you know, they passed away and they were buried at the farm. That's a very common
oh,
habit. And also,
yeah,
this one happened to be in a museum, so it was easy to get a hold of. They didn't have to do a lot of digging. But what happened is, as a yearling, the two horses were by the same sire. They were living at the same farm, two different mares, very similar looking, were mixed up as yearlings. And ended up, you know, one was the other, and they were all turned around. Now, what I'm curious about, and apparently this whole thing got started by a groom who had been fired, let go, whatever, by the breeder, and he put out that, oh, by the way, this is the wrong horse. Well, everybody discounted his story because, oh, he's just mad because he was fired. But that really is what took place. So the horse that won the 1880 Derby is really Tadcaster, not Bend Orr. But what I'm really, really curious about, and somebody needs to make it into a movie, is all those horses whose lineage is Bend Orr, when the horse went to stud, did the horse that went to stud, was that really Bend Orr, or was that really Tadcaster? This is the stuff that Dick Francis novels are made of. Somebody needs to make a movie.
This is a bunch of scientists with not much to do, is really what it is. They did a bunch of other horses, too, I guess. They did the DNA testing on a bunch of other horses, too. But, wow, the things that you can do with DNA today, even on 150-year-old horses.
Yeah.
You're out there.
Pretty cool.
Now, you did say this is not, you know, this is not something that's reserved to the 1880s, getting babies mixed up. You were telling me yesterday that, now we won't name names here, but you were telling me yesterday, and we won't even say how you became familiar with this, but even in the breeding, the modern thoroughbred breeding operations of today, they're getting the foals mixed up.
Yes, I was talking to a person on the phone the other day, who is involved in the veterinary industry and goes to farms. And they were talking about how with recipient mares, when they do embryo transfers, the recipient mare can be completely disconnected with the actual parents because you have a mare and a stallion. Well, the mare is impregnated. The embryo is removed from the mare, who is the actual parent, and put into a recipient mare. So, you know, the person who has the physical possession of the mare when she foals may have never even seen the mare, the real parents. Well, they get to the farms to do the brand new baby checkup for the brand new baby, make sure everybody's happy and healthy. Okay, who's the sire and dam of this foal? Oh, we don't know. No, she's a recipient mare. So somebody's spending tens of thousands of dollars, most likely, to get this embryo transfer foal, and then they have to add the expense of doing DNA testing on it because they have no idea who the parent is. They've lost track.
I know, and then some. We've heard stories that sometimes even when they get to be yearlings, there's a couple of them that look alike, and their halters get mixed up, or you know, they just get. It's sort of like they do in the hospital, you know, when they switch babies. It's the same way at these breeding farms. Now, some of them are very good about keeping track. Some are even using iPads now, and they carry them with them everywhere they go, and everything's marked down right away. But you know, it still happens where these foals get mixed up sometimes, and
well,
they
yeah,
all kind of do look alike.
Yeah, and they're a lot of the farms are just compulsive about getting tags on the babies right away, but tags get lost. The little halters fall off. The little neck straps get lost. They chew them off of each other. I did work for a farm years and years ago that the – and this is just – it was a horrific practice. I was just horrified when I found out how they did it. The foals were branded, which I thought, oh, that's a great idea to brand the foals. Because you can't mix that up. It's either a brand or it isn't. And each foal had a unique digit that they were branded with. But because they didn't want the foals to have markings on their bodies that would offend potential future purchasers, the foals were branded on their chest between their front legs.
Ugh.
Right where the girth goes.
Ugh.
Yeah. So you could find it when you needed to, but... It did cause issues for the horses later in life because, as many of us know, that there are certain types of biting insects that like to hang out down there, and it was a real battle to keep the biting insects from getting on hold of those areas where the hair had been burned off where the brand was. And
luckily, by the time
I started to work at the farm, they had stopped doing it. But
oh, good. Okay. Microchipping's
yeah.
much easier, I think.
Microchipping is much smarter.
Yeah. Let's go with that.
Yeah.
Yes. All right. Well, that's it for today. Thank you so much, Jennifer, for filling in today. And we are going to be back tomorrow. We have a special show planned for you. Debbie Laux is going to be with us, who is Monty Roberts' daughter. Debbie will be co-hosting the show with me. And we're, I think, keep your fingers crossed that Monty's going to get up early and is going to join us on the show tomorrow and tell us a little bit about, well, he's been hanging out with the Queen for the Jubilee over there in England. He's going to tell us a little bit about his adventures over there. And we're excited to hear that. Hopefully, Monty, keep your fingers crossed, will be with us tomorrow morning. And we have a special co-host planned for the rest of the week, so it should be fun. Don't forget, you can find all of the shows on the Horse Radio Network at horseradionetwork.com. They're all over there. And we appreciate you and you joining us every day. Please tell your friends. Tell your friends about Horses in the Morning. Tell them they should be listening to us either live. And I did have an email over the weekend that said they were from, I think it was from New Zealand, and they had just discovered the show, and they said it's very late there. How can they listen to the show? Don't forget, you can listen to the recorded version of every show. Just go to iTunes, go to the podcast section of the iTunes store, and search for Horses in the Morning, and you can subscribe right there and listen to it when you get up in the morning, which is a little later in our day. You can listen to our show every day and not miss it. That's how Mel does it down there in Australia. Guaranteed, she's not listening to it live right now at 3 in the morning. She listens to it when she gets up. So you can catch the recorded version of our show every day. That's how most people do listen to this show. So be sure to do that and tell all your friends about it. Announce it on Facebook. You know, when you see your friends at the barn, say, do you listen to Horses in the Morning? And encourage them to do so. We appreciate that. Thank you, everybody. We'll see you again tomorrow. Thank you, Jennifer. You can do Jennifer Jamie's line.
Spay, neuter, and gel, folks.
Wear your helmet, too. I'll have another. 4 days. 5 days.